No president has been elected as many times or served as long in the White House as Franklin Roosevelt. Roosevelt is consistently rated among the top three presidents in American history, and he's the subject of this week's interview with Talking History's Dennis Mihalik.
Thank you, Brian. In our third segment on significant presidential elections, we will look at the landslide victories of Franklin Roosevelt. Here to put the man and his politics in historical perspective is William Luchtenberg, professor of history at the University of North Carolina and the author of numerous books and articles on Roosevelt, including the recent compilation of his many years of scholarship in this area, The FDR Years on Roosevelt and His Legacy, published by Columbia University Press. Welcome, Professor Luchtenberg.
Good morning. Nice to talk to you.
It was interesting in your book on FDR that you recalled keeping a scorecard for the 1932 Democratic Convention. How and why did FDR capture that nomination?
Well, I think there are two reasons. One is the advantage that he had. He was a nationally known figure. He bore the magical name of Roosevelt. He was distantly related to his cousin Theodore Roosevelt, a popular figure earlier in the century. And he had run for Vice President of the United States on the Democratic ticket in 1920. In 1928, at a time when the Democratic ticket under Al Smith was losing badly, he managed to win the large state of New York, then the largest state in the country, and then was reelected in 1930 in an impressive fashion. The other reason that he was elected was that his main rivals had decided liabilities. Al Smith had, as I've said, gone down to defeat in 1928. He was a Catholic, a man associated with Tammany Hall and the machine politics of New York City. The other leading candidate, John Nance Garner, the Speaker of the House, had the disadvantage of coming from a southern state, Texas, which was regarded as already safe for the Democrats.
Okay, so FDR garners the nomination of the Democratic Party. How was he as a campaigner? We know that he suffered a physical infirmity.
That's right. He was a man in a wheelchair. He had been stricken by polio, by infantile paralysis. I have said repeatedly that I lived all through these years without knowing this, and this was true for millions of other Americans. In fact, it was widely believed that he had recovered, and in these days before television, the main impression one had was either the powerful radio voice or the image that he was able to construct of appearing to walk by handling very deftly the walking stick that he used, or the support of the strong arm of his son.
Mm-hmm.
So that what might have thought to have been a disadvantage, it didn't turn out to be one. He loved campaigning. He demonstrated his physical strength by taking an airplane to Chicago to accept the nomination of his party at a time when not many people traveled by air, and it was not usual for a candidate to appear in person to accept a nomination. So he gave every impression of being vigorous, and he campaigned all through the country.
Mm-hmm. Now, in 1932, what were the issues of this presidential race?
Well, numbers of commentators have said that Roosevelt ran a very conservative campaign in which you could not discern anything of what later became the New Deal. That's only partly true. It's true that he did come out for balancing the budget, for cutting government expenses, and he denounced Hoover as the head of one of the greatest spending administrations in peacetime, piling bureau on bureau, commission on commission. Words that would seem rather comical just a short time later when he so greatly expanded the national government. But he did also indicate that he favored what became the Tennessee Valley Authority, that he was an advocate of public power, that he wanted to be sure that none of the unemployed would be without government aid, that he favored some kind of farm program, some kind of tinkering with the currency. There was one person who never had any doubt about there being a real issue in that election, and that man was Herbert Hoover. He said that the outcome of the election would affect American politics for 100 years to come. And while that's not quite turned out to be true, it is true that it determined the course of American politics for the next generation.
Okay, that leads to the next logical question then. I mean, 32 and then especially the re-election in 36, people began referring to a Roosevelt revolution. Did Roosevelt really revolutionize American politics?
Well, he revolutionized politics in one particular sense. In 1932, he was the first Democrat to enter the White House with a majority of the popular vote in 80 years, since Franklin Pierce in 1852. Through all that period, from the Civil War to the Great Depression, only two Democrats had been elected, each for two terms, Grover Cleveland and Woodrow Wilson, but neither had secured a popular majority. They'd won in the Electoral College. Roosevelt turned that around. He created what became known as the FDR coalition, a coalition particularly of lower income voters in the great cities. In 1932, he still did not have the support of black voters who were still loyal to the party of Abraham Lincoln, the great emancipator. But by 1936, blacks too had joined that FDR coalition, where they've remained ever since. And to this day, most Americans who identify with a political party identify with the Democrats, though by a diminished margin from the 1930s. So in that sense, he revolutionized American politics, creating the only realignment of the 20th century.
Mm-hmm. Now, in that sense, in the FDR years, you argued that Roosevelt was the first, Franklin Roosevelt, was the first modern president. Why was that? I mean, what are your criteria for modern?
Yes, a very good question. And it's often a term that's too loosely used. He was modern in a number of senses, particularly with his relationship to the media. He was the first master of radio, and in his fireside chats, he talked in a conversational way to the American people, something that for the most part had not been done before. He also conducted twice a week for more than 1,000 times free-wheeling press conferences with reporters. So he was modern in the sense of grasping the importance of modern communications. Or in another sense, too, he was modern. He made use of advisors, intellectuals, brought them into his campaign and then into his government, the so-called Brain Trust of 1932 and afterwards. Although this had been done to a small degree before, never to so great an extent. And he used the full panoply of powers. He became a chief legislator, the chief economic engineer of the country. He made the White House the center of attention on the part of the American people, and created so direct a relationship to the American people that they thought of him as a father figure, someone who was directly concerned personally with their affairs, with their tribulations.
Mm-hmm. Now, you say he became the chief legislator. I mean, Americans used to the concept of the separation of powers don't think in that terms. How was Roosevelt a legislator?
He presented drafts of bills to members of Congress to be introduced. He sent 15 messages up to the Hill in the first 100 days of 1933, and Congress adapted all 15. Implied in your question is the notion that perhaps he overstepped the bounds, and indeed in 1937, after the Supreme Court had struck down something like a dozen of the measures that he asked Congress to enact and help them to push through, he presented a plan to add six new justices to the Supreme Court in order to be sure that he had a court that was favorably disposed toward New Deal legislation. He lost that particular plan, but he did bring about a marked change of attitude, which we're still seeing to this day, what has been called the Constitutional Revolution of 1937.
Mm-hmm. Now, the court packing plan, as it was called, was an obvious failure. Were there other egregious errors that Roosevelt made during his tenure?
Well, we can certainly see that there were shortcomings of the New Deal. It never succeeded in bringing the country out of depression, short of war. I would say that the two darkest marks on Roosevelt's record are his failure to do more to provide a haven for Jews in Nazi Germany in the late 1930s and afterwards. So clearly he was hampered in doing so by the anti-Semitic sentiment in this country, and then by the exigencies of war. And the other was the internment of Japanese Americans after Pearl Harbor, a blemish on the record of civil liberties in this country, for which many Americans at the time and a great many more since have felt a sense of shame.
Mm-hmm. Well, on the other side of the coin, what would you think are his major accomplishments?
If the first thing he was able to do was to bring about a remarkable recovery of confidence in a very short time. There was a deep sense of gloom, a fear that American institutions might be coming to an end, a sense of an end of an era over that hard winter of 1932-1933. By the springtime of 1933, after only a very short time, there was a remarkable revival of confidence in this country. More specifically, with respect to his programs, he introduced the welfare state to America, something we have with us still today, notably in the Social Security Act, with old age insurance, with unemployment insurance, and for a long time with aid to dependent children, as well as a panoply of other measures, the Tennessee Valley Authority, wages and hours law, aid to farmers, rural electrification, relief to the jobless. And finally, he led the country to in a successful worldwide conflict against Adolf Hitler and the fascist powers that resulted in the defeat of fascism and the triumph of democracy in Europe and elsewhere in the world.
Well, in the final minute that we have, if you take a balance then of these failures and achievements, what do you think is FDR's status, his ranking in terms of the American presidency?
Well, every poll of historians that I've seen ranks him as the greatest president of the 20th century and one of the three greatest presidents of all times. Indeed, in the in one of the recent polls, he has moved past George Washington to be regarded as the second greatest president, eclipsed only by the great emancipator, Abraham Lincoln. And I suspect that that judgment of his being the greatest president of the 20th century is likely to go largely unchallenged.
Well, thank you. That's all the time we have. I want to thank our guests, Professor William Luchtenberg of the University of North Carolina and the author of The FDR Years on Roosevelt and His Legacy, published by Columbia University Press.